This is not a shock to the team. This is something that the team is aware of. I think what the team will be processing will be how can they support him now that it's a public issue. And they've had Cavs teammates go through this in the past. Channing Frye lost both his parents last year. Yeah. He wrote an essay about the depression he went through. DeMar DeRozan, now the Toronto Raptors, obviously seemed to be the person that inspired Kevin to tell his story as well. So, you know, perhaps Cavs personnel can reach out to Raptors personnel to see how they're supporting DeMar. I think it represents a deep bond that it's going to be hard to ever quite put your finger on what the true relationship is between Kevin and LeBron, because they had some really bright moments and they've had some dark ones as well, but certainly there's a professional respect that exists there, and I think they've both gotten a lot out of one another by showing one another that you don't have to have the exact same approach, and that's what it's like to grow as an individual, grow as a professional, grow as a human being. And obviously in Kevin's time of need now, him opening up himself to the world, I'm sure it's comforting for him to have someone like LeBron say, hey man, I got your back when you go through this.
My expectation is that they will take a quarterback at number one, but also bring in a veteran. One of the problems when you talk to Cleveland people is that they didn't have a veteran in the quarterback room last year. It was all young DeShone Kizer, right, you know, and no one really to help mentor him. So even if they are planning to take Sam Darnold or whoever at number one, I would expect them to go out and get a veteran to add to that mix.
I still think they could use one of these two first-round picks on a quarterback, but I think then you really look at Saquon Barkley at the running back position and say, you know what, we've got a quarterback in McCarron. Let's bring in the best player in this year's draft, an explosive difference maker on the offensive side. And then at four, we like two of these quarterbacks, so we're pretty sure that we're gonna get one of those, you know, one of these two. And certainly if they like three, then they're guaranteed at four that they'll get one of the three quarterbacks that they like. But if you can get Barkley at one and let's say Josh Allen at number four, it's a pretty good combination. And then you have time to develop Allen.
Room him under.
A lot like the Bears did with Mike Glennon, right, and Mitch Trubisky last year. He's the safest of all the quarterbacks. When you look at his mental makeup, you look at his durability over the 2 years at USC, then his escapability on top of what he can do inside the pocket. I didn't throw the combine, and to be honest with you, I think that will have zero effect on where he winds up going when it comes to the draft. The Browns aren't going to decide to draft him or not draft him based on whether he threw it or not at the combine.
He's got 128 Division I colleges. Fact of the matter is that those who generate money should get paid. Those who don't shouldn't. Period. A scholarship should be enough for somebody that ain't generating ratings for a program. But if you are generating big-time money for a program, then obviously it's different. And for those out there that will cry and talk about the unfairness and the inequities of it all, I'm sorry. Does Phil Martelli at St. Joe's get paid as much as John Calipari at Kentucky? Does that happen? When Bruiser Flint was at Drexel, did he get paid as much as Roy Williams at North Carolina? Everybody trying to be fair and equal. There isn't equality in a capitalistic society. You know where equality comes in? That's an opportunity. In a capitalistic society, you have an opportunity to make money. You ain't guaranteed to do it. The opportunities are facilitated for you, where you'll have a shot in some instances to make it. But even then, it ain't equal. So why the hell we always talk about equality?
Introduce myself. I can do that. Welcome to the afternoon extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5, the Ticket, Toledo sports leader. Cushlin's button got stuck, or his speakers broke, or his something froze. No, whatever, yeah, it is.
It was the third one. What's something
the matter,
froze.
Cush?
I got to restart things now.
Poor little Jimmy.
Fully, I had the technology that worked.
The toys aren't working today. So I'll do the introduction. That's okay. I'll do the introduction. I'll host the show. What the hell, Cush? Why don't you just take the day off, and I'll do the sports sports centers at the top and bottom of the hour, too. I'll just get it all done.
Would be nice to have a day off. I won't lie about that.
Welcome to, in all seriousness, the Extravaganza Radio on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, we are Toledo's sports leader. We got a lot of good things to talk about today. You know, it's interesting. Stephen A. Smith, you just heard, whom you hear, of course, here before this show, and you just heard in the montage, is right and he's wrong at the same time, and he doesn't even know it. Because the one thing that he's not saying is Title IX. That's the one thing he's not talking about. When he points out, Chris, here's where he's right. He's right when he says only the revenue-producing sports should ever really have to consider paying the players something beyond their scholarships. Now, you know how I feel about this if you've been listening to this show for the last 4 years. Hard to believe that it has been, but it has. We started this in late 2014. Oh, no, not quite then, because late 2018 would be 4 years, so about 3.5 years. Anyway, the part about paying only the revenue producers, the ones that make money, certainly you don't pay money to something that loses money, should be the ones that are considered in such a way. But if you listen to me, I don't think anybody should be paid anything beyond their scholarship, because that's plenty of salary enough for college athletes. But he's saying that the excuse me, but he's saying that the non-revenue producing sports, you know, the swimming team or the you know, the diving team or the lacrosse team or the wrestling team, et cetera, you know, we're not going to be paying those athletes, because what they're doing, they're actually costing the school, costing the university money rather than creating revenue. But you know what they're going to say, particularly when it comes to women's sports. Title IX, Title IX, Title IX. You can't pay a male basketball player a stipend or salary, whatever you want to call it, without the women going crazy. Lawsuit filed in 3, 2, 1, now. And that's what they would say. And the school can go to the courts all they want and say, well, you know, the men's basketball program last year generated, $74 million in profit in television deals and in attendance and merchandise and so on and so forth. The women's basketball program last year cost us $2.5 million. In other words, we went into the red, $2.5 million to have the team. We can't exactly pay them. And that, of course, will be called sexist. They'll say that's because you don't promote the women's game as much as you promote the men's game. They'd probably follow up the lawsuit against the school with a lawsuit against the networks. Well, it's because you don't push our program. You don't put us on in prime time. You don't put UConn against Notre Dame women up on prime time. You hide it on the smaller channels, and that's why it doesn't generate revenue. If more people saw it, definitely it would make money. This is, you know, it's wrong. They're wrong. They would be high as kites to make such a statement, because case in point, the WNBA. It is promoted by the NBA. It is carried and floated financially by the men, and it's still a massive financial drain on the league. They don't make money on the WNBA. People just don't like watching women's basketball very much. And I hate to be the bearer of that bad news. I'm not trying to be Mr. Grinch, and I'm not trying to be Mr. Sexist or anything else. I got a high school daughter. She doesn't play basketball anymore, but she did. And if she was still playing, I would cheer her on. I would root for her. I would celebrate her and her team. But I would also be very, very aware of the fact that nobody comes to those games. You'll see a few parents there, maybe a couple of kids who were left around after school that are waiting for the rides home, will sit there and watch games. And then when the boys' games come on, you're going to see a full gym, or a moderately full gym, because people like higher, you know, faster basketball, and that's why revenues are generated by the male sports, particularly Division I college basketball and college football. So as Stephen A. is talking about how, you know, you only want to pay the ones, you're right, but Title IX, I'm just telling you, just forget about it. The fundamental unfairness of it all is what they will cite. And they'll say that it's because the game is rigged, you know, the system is rigged against the women. They don't have a choice. You know, it's not their fault that nobody is watching. They're working just as hard. That's what it'll come down to. You know, it won't be about revenue generated when something like this happens. And don't worry, I'm not going to be on this tangent for the whole show. I just want to respond to this because it was at the tail end of the montage. But they'll make it not about revenue generated. They'll make it about hours worked. They'll compare it to the mythical gender pay gap, which continues to float out there as some kind of a fact when it's absolutely been disproven when adjusted for all important factors in terms of time put in, time on the job, desire for promotion, et cetera, et cetera. But they'll say it's about the gender pay gap. They'll say, you know, the men are being paid, the women are not. That is sexist. You can't do that. If the men practice for, you know, I don't know, 24 hours a week, and I don't know what it really is. You know, what's a basketball team practice? 2 hours a day and then maybe an hour of lifting or an hour of film. So we'll call that 3 hours a day, probably, you know, probably 6 days a week maybe. Get off on Sundays depending on when they play and when they travel. But if they say, you know, if they practice 18 hours a week, we practice 18 hours a week. How can they be compensated with financial, with stipends or salaries or whatever, and we can't have them? It would be called sexist. It would never be allowed. So you just got to forget that right now. If you pay the players, Stephen A., you have to pay all of the players. You have to pay the women in the non-revenue generating sports. You have to pay the men in the non, you know, the baseball team that doesn't make any money. The wrestling team that doesn't make any money. The golf team, which doesn't generate any money, they're all going to have to be paid an equal amount because of fundamental fairness. That's what they would say. So just let's stop with the idea of paying players and let's just get back to the basics. As I have said on this program, ad infinitum. I mean, so many times, you need to continue to impress upon these people the value of a free college education. Because millions and millions and millions of young people go to college every year, taking out massive amounts of loans, working their tails off at side jobs during, you know, outside of class time, working in the summer to pay for their out-of-pocket tuition. And then after they go through all of those struggles, then when they graduate with $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 in loan debt, depending on where they went to school. And they got to pay those back for the next couple of decades out of their paychecks. That is a burden that scholarship athletes don't have to carry. And as I've said before, maybe it would be better, you know, they would be better served if people like Stephen A. and people like Jay Billis and people like the announcers on the NCAA tournament games and if people like the agents and so on and so forth, if they were just honest with these young people and tell them, you're not going pro. College golfer, you're not going to make the tour. College swimmer, you ain't going to the Olympics. College football player, you're not NFL material. College basketball player, the NBA's not calling. Because it only calls those things for the 1%. Maybe 2 or 3% depending. The almost, you know, 9 of every 10 of you are not going to play your sport for a living. You're going to have to go into the work world for a living, and your free education that came in exchange for your efforts while on the playing field or surface in college, that free education is what's going to get you there. That's what you should pursue. That's what you should embrace. That's the value of a college athletic scholarship. So there you have it. I just needed to throw that out there because Stephen A.'s little comment there at the end. You also heard in that montage Kevin Love on his panic attacks. We're going to talk a little bit about that. Dan Graziano and Todd McShay talking about the NFL draft. I don't know if I really want to go there again today with the same questions about the same quarterbacks and Saquon Barkley. But I have a few other things to talk about when it does come to the NFL. What NFL wide receiver is recruiting LeBron James to come and play for his team? Not joking. We all know LeBron James once upon a time, a lifetime ago for the 33-year-old NBA Hall of Famer in waiting, was an all-state football player. He's got the body of a linebacker or a tight end or a slot receiver or an amazing safety. There's one player who says, come on, LeBron, before you go, you could become the greatest athlete in history. All you'd have to do is play a season with us and win a Super Bowl with us. What NFL wide receiver is calling on LeBron? I will tell you who that receiver is, and we'll talk about why it is there aren't more two-sport athletes. There used to be, not a ton of them, but when you think of the elite, Bo Jackson, and when you think of the next level down from that, Deion Sanders, and when you go old school, Jim Thorpe, I'm just wondering, why don't more athletes take a chance and be the best or be the best they can be at a couple of different sports if they are multi-talented like some of those stars that I just mentioned? I think it would have been fantastic to see Tony Gonzalez play a season in the NBA. I think it would have been remarkable to see a guy like Nate Robinson, who tried way too late in his career, but who was a super fast, lightning quick defensive football player in high school, a corner. Why he couldn't have gone and played a season or two in the NFL when he was a little younger. He tried out 2 years ago after he essentially retired or couldn't find another job in the NBA. He tried out with the Seahawks and got some pretty good reviews, but he's just a little too up there in years for that to work now. But why don't some of these guys do that? That's another subject for a different part of the show. For now, let's go to Sam, who's calling us from Sylvania without me even giving out the phone number, because Sam is motivated to talk about paying college players. And let's bring him up now on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Hey there, Sam. How are you?
Hey, Bob. What's going on? Hey, first of all, let's just say, hey, the dedication it takes to train sports-specific for any given sport, it's tough to do, too. You got to work year-round, sports-specific for baseball, football, basketball, whatever it is. I don't think teams want people playing two sports. I don't think this day and age it's really even realistic, number one. But number two,
Hold on. Let's hit that for just a second.
Okay.
I know it is a different era. To me, it still feels like the same era as when Bo did this, because, that was, it was in the 80s, late 80s. I still feel like that's today. When I think of different eras, I think of the 60s and 50s, the 80s.
Bo's a droid.
What's that?
Bo is not human. Bo's not a human.
Well, what about Dion? What about Dion, who did the same thing and had tremendous success? Not as much as Bo, but tremendous success in both baseball and football.
Was not a great baseball player. Not a great hitter.
Not a great baseball player, but had a successful career. Had he not played football at all, he would have had himself a 10-year major league career.
Correct. That's my point. My point is, in order to be great at a sport, you have to sports-specific train year-round. He decided he was going to be good at football because, guess what, you can't be great at both. So he was a good baseball player. Could have been great, but you've only got so much time to train specific to your sport.
Dion, just because you brought it up and I felt like looking it up, Dion had a career batting average, I'm going to ask you, Sam, since you brought it up. What do you think Dion hit for his career? In parts of nine seasons, by the way. It wasn't just like a one- or two-year flash-in-the-pan type thing. In parts of 9 years, what do you think his career batting average was?
I don't know, in the 180s?
263.
I have no idea.
263.
Pretty good.
263. I'm not saying he should go to Cooperstown, but I'm surprised by that.
He's fantastic.
Yeah.
He wasn't great.
But he was able to contribute to winning teams, both in football, of course, as a champion, and in baseball as well, on some pretty decent teams with Cincinnati and Atlanta in his 20s. I don't know. I think it's maybe part of my opinion on this, Sam, is a little pushback against the youth sports culture that makes kids choose one sport by the time they're like 12. If you're going to play baseball, you got to play fall ball, you got to do winter instructional, you got to get it out there in the spring leagues, and then you got to play all summer. Or basketball, if you want to make the basketball team next year, you got to play in the spring in AAU programs, you got to play summer league. They don't want people to play other sports, and I don't like that, and so maybe it's just part of my bias pushing back against that youth sports culture, and I'm taking it to the NFL or to the professional level, saying I would love to see guys who have the ability, go for it and pursue. There's going to be a little crossover in schedules, but why not?
Urban Meyer loves two-sport athletes.
Does he?
Look at the track record. He does, because what they find is when you're training the same all the time, your body parts, your joints, and everything wear out in a particular way. But when you change your training pattern, you actually gain sometimes better balance, sometimes better stability, and a different vision for the game.
They call it repetitive motion or something like that, repetitive motion injury. I can't remember exactly what it's called, but you're right.
Yep.
If you do the same thing over and over again, it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's pitching a baseball or bowling. Whatever it is, your joints are going to wear out at a disproportionate rate if you continue to do the same thing. So Urban is right to like multi-sport athletes. So that's a great point. So Sam, what was your answer on the paying college players? I may have missed that at the beginning. I apologize.
Well, I feel like this, okay? I agree kind of with Stephen A. in this regard, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, if you go, I'm one of those players that went and played NAIA football. I didn't get paid a dime for it. I'm out of college with $67,000 worth of student loans.
Right.
Just like the average person who didn't play football. I played because I liked to play. The difference between me and Ted Ginn and, you know, other Buckeyes, Wolverines, Oklahoma, Alabama, I don't generate millions of dollars for my NAIA school.
Right.
And so, as an 18-year-old, whether I'm in the military, whatever the case may be, if I go to medical school, okay, and I'm doing something in the lab, okay, and I come up with a huge discovery to cure cancer or whatever the case may be, if I generate that income, I have a right to keep some of that. I feel like these players, most of them won't go to the NFL, so as a result, these colleges, though a scholarship is a very, very, very great thing, and I would have loved to have had a college scholarship.
So would I.
It's not proportionate in most cases to the amount of revenue that a guy like Johnny Manziel, love him or hate him, or a guy like, you name it, well,
who says it has to be proportional? You know?
I feel like this. If you work at the ticket, you probably want to make sure that if they're making $72 million a year, and most of those people that if they're generating money, most of that's coming from your radio talk show, I don't think you're going to say, "Hey, I'll take $50,000" or
no, but it doesn't matter. No, but that's not how it works, though, because we're not talking about we're talking about a corporation. Now let's view a college. A university like Ohio State or Michigan as a corporation. And to me, the developer of the latest app or the latest improvement on the iPhone may generate another, you know, $50 million per year in sales on the next generation of iPhone when they release iPhone 11 or whatever the heck it is. But do you think they're going to give that guy 20 of the $50 million because he came up with it? No, he's going to get his salary for being a developer. Whatever it is, that's what it is. And how much the company makes off of what the guy did is the company's business. And it's their profit because they had the foresight to hire him. And that's just it. You know, you can't, you know, one developer, if I'm, you know, let's say there are five of them working side by side at desks and computers, and they're all trying to come up with the next big thing, and one of them comes up with a bigger thing than the other four, but they're all working on the same salary. He might get a bonus, maybe, for doing something like that, but it's not going to be quote-unquote proportional to the millions that the company rakes in because he happened to come up with something great. He just did his job. Johnny Manziel, doing his job. Troy Smith, doing his job. You know, that's
but
just
they
what,
also,
they're, what, they're, what
the
they're supposed to.
The NCAA also tells you can't make money while you're there because you're on scholarship. Well, hey, listen, you're 18 years old. Guess what? You're out there generating millions of dollars for a university for a $20,000 a year scholarship? Come on.
But Sam, what you're forgetting is what you just mentioned a few moments ago when you said you left your NAIA school with $60,000-some in debt. Those guys aren't.
Correct.
That $20,000 you're talking about, these guys are living cost-free while they're at school. Their clothes are paid for. Their meals are paid for. Their medical care is paid for. It's all paid for when the regular student has to come out of pocket for all of that. And if that doesn't sound like a salary, I don't know what a salary is.
Well, I understand, but the regular students aren't pulling in millions of dollars for a university, so they should have to pay to go get that education, number one. Number two, clothes are not paid for. Number three, it's not free for the athletes. I can tell you right now, 4 years at NAIA school, I've had 5 knee surgeries, 4 hernia surgeries, 2 finger surgeries, broken ribs, bruised kidneys, arthritis pretty bad, and I hurt when I get up. Okay?
Yeah.
It's not free to play that game.
Okay, well,
and
again, no. But no, I'm saying your life while you're there is free, though. And by the way, any piece of clothing that you see a Division I athlete wearing that has the school logo on it, if there's a block O or a block M on it, it was free.
Free advertising.
It's free. It's what they.
Branding.
It's what everybody else has to go to the school spirit shop and buy. They don't have to. It's free, along with all the other things. And the other part about this, my friend, is this. What about the tight end, the blocking tight end, nondescript? He's not Ezekiel Elliott famous, but he went to every weight session Elliott went to. He went to every film session. He went to every practice. He got hit just as hard. He hit just as hard, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? He's waking up with the same thing you're talking about now. But what's that?
This is not China.
Is he going to pay? Is he going to get paid the same amount as Ezekiel Elliott?
Absolutely.
Okay, and then let's
part
talk,
of that team.
But then let's talk about. Let's go to one of the other sports where somebody else is doing the exact same thing, same effort, same weight, same this, same that, same number of hours put into their craft, but their sport doesn't generate revenue. Are you going to be able to convince a jury when the lawsuit happens, which will happen in 3-2-1, that this guy doesn't deserve the same compensation as the other guy does?
Listen, the Starbucks employee has better benefits and makes more money than Tim Hortons employee. That's a fact. But the service you get and the coffee you get is completely different. So guess what? If you're at a sport that generates millions of dollars, then pay them. Guess what? If you're a wrestler, then you're working for a scholarship because no one shows up to watch you wrestle.
Well,
but the
point is, if your sport generates millions and you get a couple hundred thousand when all of the value of your scholarship is added up, I think we should call it square. And that's where we have to leave this conversation, my friend.
Thank you, Sam. Why do you think it's square?
But because, right. Well, like I said, because I think a couple hundred thousand dollars spread out over 4 years, that's about $50,000 a year for your services and helping the corporation generate millions. And I think that's a pretty doggone good salary. So I do have to go, Sam. Thanks for the phone call. It is 3:34. We are behind the times. Let's get caught up. We have a sports center coming your way. We have some hockey tickets to give away for this Friday's game for the Walleye. And we also have to get wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports.
Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. Today on Monday, the Blazers beat the Lakers 108-103. So what? That's not wild. What is wild is it was LA's 15th straight loss to Portland. That's the second longest skid for any one team or to any one team in Lakers franchise history, and the longest since the team moved to LA all the way back in 1960. The longest streak was the Minneapolis Lakers, dropping 18 straight to the Celtics in the late 1950s. That is wild. And that's your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. All right, before we get out and get to that sports center, let's do that hockey thing, will you? It's Lenten Friday coming up, day after tomorrow, and that means you need fish. That's just what we do, particularly if you are of the Christian faith, the Catholic faith. All kidding aside, though, if you would like to go see the fish, meaning the walleye, taking on Quad City Friday at 7:15 faceoff, we'll set you up. Got a pair of tickets for you if you are caller number, what do you think, Kush? Six?
Sure. Let's go six. Let's go triple overtime.
I like that. I like the way you think. Triple overtime is fun hockey. All right, caller six at 866-240-1065. Those tickets will be yours, and we're back after this.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Take it easy on my eardrums, Mr. Cushlin. You're hot! I'm going to do what everybody else would do to me.
You know what? I'm trying to get the extra yelling in for when I call people out on strikes later this spring.
Oh, yeah. You're practicing for your umpiring crew or your gig, your little side gig there. Yeah, how's that going for you?
It's all right.
What do you get more grief from parents over, the balls and strikes on the diamond or when you destroy calls on the basketball court?
But I would actually have to say the balls and strikes, though I actually like doing the umpiring a little better. I don't know what it is.
So you get more crap from the fans in baseball, but you like it better anyway?
Yeah, as weird as that may sound.
No,
yeah.
It's not weird at all. It explains why you work with me, because you like getting crap. Because you get a bunch of it from me, too. Hey, congratulations, Ken Crockett of Toledo. He won the walleye ticket, so he'll be going on Friday night, and we've got more to give away. That's the game against Quad City. As a matter of fact, we're swimming. Ooh, like what I did there with the walleye. We're swimming in walleye tickets. We got two more pair to give away to that game, and then I think we've got three pair also for Sunday's game against the Indy Fuel. And we may leave a few of those behind if Cushion doesn't sell them first for Mike Miller to give away on the hockey show tonight. So anyway, Juju Smith-Schuster, wide receiver for the Pittsburgh Steelers, just had a very, very good rookie year. As a matter of fact, he was so good. He He made the Steelers' secondary or second-option receiver after the best receiver in football, Antonio Brown. Martavis Bryant wanted to be traded in the middle of the season because Juju was becoming a star. It was Antonio Bryant one, and then Juju Smith-Schuster was the second favorite receiver for Ben Roethlisberger. So he had a really great season, but he thinks he can have an even better one next year if he can get the right teammate on his side. Juju Smith-Schuster has decided what his team needs to go over the top and to win the Super Bowl is maybe the greatest athlete on the planet today. Juju Smith-Schuster is tweeting not just words, but an image. Somehow, some way, he got an artist to render this, or maybe he did it himself. I don't know. But Juju Smith-Schuster is tweeting that LeBron James needs to come to Pittsburgh to join the Steelers and pursue a Super Bowl. Kush, I don't know if you've seen this, but there's like a mural that Juju tweeted out. It's got a picture of like a it's black and gold, as you can imagine,
right.
Steelers colors. It's got a golden sky behind, you know, a black silhouetted Pittsburgh skyline.
Yeah, I saw this earlier this morning. Yeah, yes, I did.
And then superimposed in front of that is LeBron James' face looking dark and menacing.
Not
the smiling LeBron you see. In fact, he's got, you know what's weird is, I don't know why they did this, but they put a headband on him, but not the kind of headband that he used to wear
right.
when he played. It looks like, you know, like the blue collar bandana kind of a thing. It looks
almost,
like it would be a bandana,
that's a good
right?
way to put it, yeah.
You see it, right?
Yes.
So he's got, you know, like to come to Steel City, come to work, you know, come to put in the work. And then it's got the King James logo for his Nike line, and then it says King James, the next step, 2018. And then in the bottom left-hand corner, he signed it, Juju. So, you know, maybe he's ultra-talented in digital art. But he put this together and then tweeted it out from Team Juju. That's his Twitter feed. And he tweeted, quote, announcing my official campaign. Dude, this just sounds so stupid.
I know.
This is a Hall of Famer in waiting, trying to win another championship and, try to forge his way onto the Mount Rushmore of NBA greats. If possible, to try to shove Michael Jordan's name aside by the time he's done.
Right.
To try to maybe win the all-time scoring crown from Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. It's just so silly. But he's so good at it, you know, what Smith-Schuster did here. I heard an interview with him today, by the way, on a national television show, and he's really a very likable dude. I like Juju a lot. I mean, just a super intelligent guy with a great sense of humor, but he played it so well, like he was so serious. He's like, you know, he's just a great straight man. As if, no, this is what I'm doing. This isn't a joke, you know. And clearly it has to be, but he's just sold it so well. I was so impressed by it. And what he wrote was, announcing my official campaign to recruit at King James to the Pittsburgh Steelers for the 2018 season. LeBron has done everything in the NBA. He can be the best athlete ever if he makes the move to the NFL and wins a Super Bowl with Steeler Nation. Hashtag LeBron to Pittsburgh. That tweet went out at 3 o'clock. Hilarious. I give him credit for bringing a little bit of fun to a down period. Maybe, you know, the combine is over. We're waiting for the draft. And
we're still, you know, about a week away from free agency really getting underway.
And when exactly is the draft, Jim?
Gosh.
I don't even know the starting date for it. But it's obviously, you know, it's coming sooner rather than later, I suppose. I just don't remember the exact date. It's mid-April.
April 26, 27, and 28.
Okay. I thought mid-April. It's late April. Okay.
At least it's not in May like that couple years ago. That was just idiotic.
Yeah. They, moving it up is definitely the right thing to do. I wish they'd move it up a little bit further, to be quite honest with you, but whatever. But it's kind of a down period in the NFL, and nobody's really talking about the NFL other than the combine. And he injected a little bit of fun into this. But he tweeted that out at 3 o'clock yesterday. In the afternoon, and it had, well, hold on, let me refresh. Oh, yeah, 53,000 likes and 16,000 retweets. Steeler Nation is feeling it. They love the idea of LeBron James coming. And you know, it obviously silly, it's not something LeBron would do at age 33 and risk injury, and that would derail him from whatever the final accomplishments of his Hall of Fame NBA career going to be. But it does make me wish, truthfully, that he had done this at least for a year. Maybe when he was 27, 28, somewhere, you know, in that physical prime of his. And, you know, what's really amazing is people are pointing out the obvious. He is absurdly muscular. There was a piece in Sports Illustrated on Juju and this little, campaign by Dan Gartland on NSI, who said, LeBron James, I've been dreaming of this scenario ever since LeBron moved to Miami and got absurdly muscular. He's 6'8", 250, and can move as well as anybody in the NBA. I think he's the most well-rounded athlete in the history of pro sports. Well, let's stop that, because Bo Jackson existed. Let's not forget that Bo Jackson existed. And he even has a football background. Jim, I didn't know about this. Having been offered a scholarship to Notre Dame when he was a high school sophomore.
No kidding. No, I did not.
I didn't know that either. I knew he was All-State, not first team, but like maybe second team All-State or something like that as a sophomore at Akron St. Vincent St. Mary on the football team as a receiver. But I did not know they actually had a scholarship offer, especially one to Notre Dame. That's pretty amazing. But when he was in his physical prime in that period of time, first of all, I might take issue with the Sports Illustrated point that he got absurdly muscular when he went to Miami. He has been absurdly muscular for almost his entire pro career, starting out at age 18. His physical strength has been one of the greatest things about him. You know, his great footwork is one thing. His ability to control his body in midair, a lot of players have had that. But nobody at 250 has had that. You know, 250 is what you think of Karl Malone,
right?
You know, who played at about that, and he was absurdly muscular. Karl Malone looked like a pro wrestler. In fact, he did that a little while right after his career ended. You may recall with Dennis Rodman. They did a tag team match in WCW at one point. But Karl Malone, that, you know, he was kind of like that physical freak size, but he never had the athleticism that LeBron does. You know, Karl Malone's, you know, pad and move was the pick and roll with John Stockton, you know, and or the pick and pop, and he was such a great shooter, but he was never the type of, you know, had the ability to handle the point, drive and defend and sky for block shots the way LeBron. LeBron's, we all know this. You know, he's not only is he the most freakish athlete, you know, of this generation, but in the NBA, maybe of any generation. You know, and that includes Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan, to me, is the best player ever, but pure athlete, LeBron is better. LeBron's so much stronger. You know, they're both fast. They both can jump out of the gym. Both can score at will. Michael a little bit better, but you understand the point. So I would love to have seen that. And it just makes me wonder if anybody will try to do what Bo Jackson and Deion Sanders once did. Russell Wilson, you know what he did about a week ago, Jim?
I believe he was in Tampa with the Yankees.
He was. He belongs to the Yankees. They own his baseball rights.
That's right.
And they brought him in for a week, and they gave him that bat in a spring training game.
They did.
He struck out. It wasn't, you know, 1-2-3 embarrassing. I think he fouled one off on his first pitch, took a couple of balls, worked it to a 2-2 count, and then eventually struck out swinging on a 2-2 pitch. So obviously he was a tremendous baseball player as a younger man, as an amateur. We all know Tim Tebow is pursuing, although has he played in a spring training? Because we know he ruined his ankle on a sprinkler head in a freak accident in the outfield in the Mets camp. Because, you know, he went to big league camp.
Yeah, he did. Yeah,
and one Met scout slash, no, I don't know what he was. Somebody in the front office said, I predict he will be a Met at some point before he's done. He will make the big league club for a little while at least before he's done. That's what somebody in their front office said. And I was like, man, I can't wait to see him build on what he did last year, which is the first time swinging a bat since high school.
Right.
Which is a lot of years ago. I don't know exactly how many, 12 maybe, something like that. And building on that now, having, you know, had the opportunity to work on it in the offseason, et cetera, I was looking forward to seeing what he was able to do in this camp. And then he blew his ankle out or something on a sprinkler head. And so I don't even know if he's had an at bat yet. Do you, Jim?
I am reading something from NewJersey.com from yesterday that he was taking BP from Jacob DeGrom. So if he's being still held out, he's on his way back is what this sounds like.
Okay, well, that's good to hear. Hold on. Here's what I have. Tebow will. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he did. He did. How about that? This literally was posted. What is today? The 7th. So this would have been on Sunday. The Mets are rolling out a lineup for Sunday's Grapefruit League game against the Nationals. Tim Tebow will bat eighth as the designated hitter against the Washington Nationals. So he did come back. Okay, I didn't realize that he had come back. I have no idea how he did. I'd like to find that out. This is obviously not the scenario I'm discussing because he's not playing football any longer. But we're seeing guys who have had, you know, great careers or great success at two sports as younger people in amateur athletics. And I'm wondering, do you think we'll ever see another one? Because I mentioned this in passing, Jim. I would love to have seen Hall of Fame tight end Tony Gonzalez play a season, you know, or as much of a season as he could, in the NBA. He was an All-American basketball player at Cal. And he just happened to be better at football. But he was a very good basketball player. I'll tell you somebody else that you may or may not understand of how good of it, well, how great of an athlete and how good and skilled of a basketball player as he was, is Terrell Owens. Terrell Owens is not somebody that I'm a huge fan of, but I'm not a huge fan of LeBron either, but I respect talent and I respect greatness in all of its forms. I don't care who has it. Terrell Owens, I can tell you there was a time back in 2001, the Raiders and the Niners had a charity basketball game against one another in Oracle Arena.
Okay.
And this is when I was out there working for the Raiders. So they asked me to do the PA. So I was the PA announcer for the Raiders Niners charity.
By the way, can I take a quick dig real quick before you continue?
Sure.
Given the time period you're talking about being out at Oracle, I wonder if this game's crowd was better than the Warriors crowds those days.
Well, yeah, that was Jason Richardson time.
Right.
I think Antoine Jameson was there.
Yep. Because really, before this current era, you know, Golden State Warriors kind of stunk constantly.
Not kind of, awful. They were one of the worst two or three franchises in basketball during that period of time. So, yeah, I mean, you're right. Oracle was rocking with Niners and Raiders fans much more than for actual Warriors games back at that time. It depends on who was coming in. But anyway, so this is a while now. Obviously, that's 2 years before LeBron came into the NBA back in 2001. But anyway, I was doing the PA and just having some fun calling threes and dunks. And I'm telling you what, Terrell Owens, and I know he was playing against a bunch of other football players. So you can't quite make an apples to apples comparison about how he could do. But if you can shoot, you can shoot. And dude could shoot from the three, from the mid-range jumper, and the explosiveness when he would attack the basket. Again, he wasn't trying to attack it against a rim-protecting, you know, Andre Drummond or something. He was doing it against Ray, but he flew in for dunks and he flew in for acrobatic layups. And I'm telling you, he was easily the best player on the floor. And he at the time kind of had talked about wanting to get a workout with an NBA team to see if he could play a few games for somebody. And I think he could have. I really do. So my point is there ever going to be another one of those? Is there ever going to be another Bo or Dion? And people don't realize, that Dion had a much better career in baseball than people think, as the previous caller brought up, and I just looked up his stats. I didn't know this. Would you have guessed that he hit career 263 in Major League Baseball?
No, I really would not have guessed that. I honest to goodness wouldn't. And, you know, as you're making me think about this,
that's in 641 career games, by the way, a 9-year career. That's, now, obviously,
that's pretty decent.
That's a healthy sample.
Yes.
Hell yes, 2,325 plate appearances. Now, obviously, these were parts of seasons because football, you know, for example, he played 57 games in 1990, 54, I'm just going to go forward, 97, 95, 92. That's when he was getting really good, you know, playing more than half the season, 46, 46, 85, then 33, 52. And in his last year, 1997, played 115 games. In 115 games, that's pretty much playing a full season, even if you're not an everyday player. He hit 273. He drew 34 walks. He stole 56 bases, as you can imagine. That would lead the league today.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, it's a different time. Had 23 RBIs. I'm just saying, he did not embarrass himself.
No.
His batting averages in some of those years, 270. Hold on, where'd he go? Oh, 304, 276, 283, 288, 277, 268, 240, 285, 273. Then in his last year, at age 33, LeBron's current age, kind of hanging on, played in only 32 games, had 83 plate appearances, and hit 173, which dragged that batting average down to its career number, as I mentioned, of 273. He stole 186 bases in those 9 years, 63 walks, 168 runs driven in, 39 home runs. I'm telling you, the guy had a pretty decent little Major League Baseball career while being a Hall of Fame cornerback. And I just love the hell out of his story, and I love even more Bo's story.
Yeah.
And Juju Smith-Schuster's got my appetite wet. Now I'm sitting at WHET. Yes, I'm thinking of it. I want to see LeBron James go do it. Go do it for one season. I know he can't, and I know he won't, but damn it, I would love to see it.
It would be absolutely fun. And, you know, you got me thinking about all the various quote-unquote two-way players, you know, over the years, and you mentioned a whole bunch of great names. But I'm almost ashamed for both of us, with the Cleveland ties we have, that anytime this discussion ever comes up, how we cannot bring up Kenny Lofton and his time at Arizona. Went
oh
to
my
Final
goodness.
Four,
That's
for
right.
goodness sake. I don't even have his stats right now. 3-year starter, 4.8, 2.6 assists for his 4-year career at Arizona back in the late 80s.
Yeah, that's another guy. That's what I'm talking about. I don't know. You know, and clearly the caller was right. Sam, I think I was right. The clubs... Neither club would want to share their athlete with the other sport.
Right.
And
it's a different era now.
They want full-time dedication and so on and so forth. They don't want to risk injury, and contracts would have to be all altered if you got injured doing the other sport, blah, blah, blah. I get it, but, man, it just – that fantasy appetite, or, you know, that fantasy feeling, it's just kind of whetting my appetite. I would love to see great players do great things in other venues. I just really, really think it's a phenomenon. That's why I'm rooting for Tebow. Quite frankly, that's why I'm rooting for Tebow. I'm going to tell you something else. I've always thought like this. I rooted for Ed Too Tall Jones when he became a professional boxer. I wanted to see a defensive end, one of the great defensive ends and one of the great defenses, Dallas's doomsday defense of all time, a 6'9" defensive end, became a pro boxer. And damn it, I wanted to see him beat Muhammad Ali. That's how I just think it's a very, very cool thing. So Juju Smith-Schuster, thanks for the idea. Obviously, it's never going to happen. But, man, the fun thing and the little digital black and gold thing that he did to try to entice. You know, it's so funny. LeBron's being recruited by everybody. There are signs, Jim Cushlin, billboards
yeah.
that Philadelphia
we
fans.
We haven't talked much about that.
No, they bought billboards along the highways in Cleveland.
Is it like to and from the airport or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, right,
the way it
right,
works?
Right. That's, if you look at them, they're all over the Internet. You can see them. But they're all saying, LeBron, finish the process. And it shows like a basketball diagram, you know, like a whiteboard.
Yeah.
And it shows the positioning of all the players.
Right.
And it's got Ben Simmons' number, Joel Embiid's number, and it's got a 23 with a star next to it. Imagine this lineup, you know. And they're trying to recruit LeBron from Philadelphia. The Lakers are now, because, you know, the Cavs are about to embark on a West Coast trip.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to L.A.
Yep.
The Lakers are doing the same thing, or Laker fans, not, you know, not,
right.
not
yeah,
the actual
yeah,
club, because it would be tampering. They're doing the same thing. And now you got Juju Smith-Schuster trying to bring him to the Steelers of the NFL.
Oh, can you imagine what the last 2 weeks of June and the first week of July are going to be like with all this stuff?
Oh, my goodness. No, no. But this is fun, though. I want to thank Juju for that little bit of fun. All right, we have a lot more work to do. We're going to talk to Todd Walker, by the way, at the bottom of the next hour. BG season has come to a close. We'll have kind of a Bowling Green Falcon retrospective on the basketball season that has come to a close. That'll be at 4:35, but let's get a Sports Center coming up next right here on The Ticket.
This is not a shock to the team. This is something that the team is aware of. I think what the team will be processing will be how can they support him now that it's a public issue. And they've had Cavs teammates go through this in the past. Channing Frye lost both his parents last year. He wrote an essay about the depression he went through. DeMar DeRozan, now the Toronto Raptors, obviously seemed to be the person that inspired Kevin to tell his story as well. So, you know, perhaps Cavs personnel can reach out to Raptors personnel to see how they're supporting DeMar. I think it represents a deep bond that it's going to be hard to ever quite put your finger on what the true relationship is between Kevin and LeBron, because they had some really bright moments, and they've had some dark ones as well. But certainly there's a professional respect that exists there. And I think they've both gotten a lot out of one another by showing one another that you don't have to have the exact same approach. And that's what it's like to grow as an individual, grow as a professional, grow as a human being. And obviously in Kevin's time of need now, him opening up himself to the world, I'm sure it's comforting for him to have someone like LeBron say, hey man, I got your back when you go through this.
My expectation is that they will take a quarterback at number one, but also bring in a veteran. One of the problems when you talk to Cleveland people is that they didn't have a veteran in the quarterback room last year. It was all young DeShone Kizer,
right.
You know, and no one really to help mentor him. So even if they are planning to take Sam Darnold or whoever at number one, I would expect them to go out and get a veteran to add to that mix.
I still think they could use one of these two first-round picks on a quarterback, but I think then you really look at Saquon Barkley at the running back position and say, you know what, we've got a quarterback in McCarron. Let's bring in the best player in this year's draft, an explosive difference maker on the offensive side. And then at four, we like two of these quarterbacks, so we're pretty sure that we're gonna get one of those, you know, one of these two. And certainly, if they like three, then they're guaranteed at four that they'll get one of the three quarterbacks that they like. But if you can get Barkley at one, and let's say Josh Allen at number four, that's a pretty good combination. And then you have time to develop Allen,
room him under
a lot like the Bears did with Mike Glennon, right, and Mitch Trubisky last year. He's the safest of all the quarterbacks. When you look at his mental makeup, you look at his durability over the 2 years at USC, then his escapability on top of what he can do inside the pocket. I didn't throw at the combine, and to be honest with you, I think that will have zero effect on where he winds up going when it comes to the draft. The Browns aren't going to decide to draft him or not draft him based on whether he threw it or not at the combine.
He's got 128 Division I-A colleges. Fact of the matter is that those who generate money should get paid. Those who don't, shouldn't. Period. A scholarship should be enough for somebody that ain't generating ratings for revenue, rather for a program. But if you are generating big-time money for a program, then obviously it's different. And for those out there that will cry and talk about the unfairness and the inequities of it all, I'm sorry. Does Phil Martelli at St. Joe's get paid as much as John Calipari at Kentucky? Does that happen? When Bruiser Flint was at Drexel, did he get paid as much as Roy Williams at North Carolina? Everybody trying to be fair and equal. There isn't equality in a capitalistic society. You know where equality comes in? That's an opportunity. In a capitalistic society, you have an opportunity to make money. You ain't guaranteed to do it. The opportunities are facilitated for you, where you'll have a shot in some instances to make it. But even then, it ain't equal. So why the hell we always talk about equality?
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Because the courts are going to talk about equality, Stephen. That's why. Because the courts are the deciding factor in everything. Welcome as we continue on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo Sports Center. MAC basketball this week at the Q out in Cleveland. Toledo Rockets have a matchup tomorrow. What's that, Jim? 6:30-ish, I think. I want to say they take on Miami.
Yeah. That's the 6:30 slot, so early evening.
So Rockets are still alive. Obviously, we talked to Coach Todd Kowalczyk yesterday, and the Falcons are not. Bowling Green, of course, saw their season come to an end. They finished right at 500, I believe. Didn't
yep,
they?
Exactly at 500. They were 16-10, then lost six in a row.
Normally, we talk to Coach Michael Huger every week, or Kush does, because of the timing of everything. It works out better that way. And, you know, we get a little update from him in the same way we do Coach Kowalczyk. But since the season ended, Coach Huger is already on the road.
Yep.
He is recruiting. He's on recruiting trips right now, probably taking in a lot of tournament basketball games, Ohio, Michigan, around the country, wherever it is that he finds these guys. But he's on the road. So coming up in about, 20 minutes or so, we're going to hear from Todd Walker, the voice of Bowling Green basketball, and he will give the season retrospective on the Falcons. So we continue our MAC coverage, even if they're not playing and even if the season is over for Bowling Green. We'll have that for you coming up in about a half an hour. I mean, actually, more of like 20 minutes. So that'll be coming up then. Also, I've got more walleye tickets to give away, so make sure that you stick around for that. As a matter of fact, I might just give you – now I'm going to wait till the bottom of the hour. I'll wait till the bottom of the hour and I'll give another pair of walleye tickets away. Christian, this is one of the cooler non-football – well, actually, hold on, follow-up. Two follow-ups to what we discussed in the first hour. Number one, the caller, I asked him what he thought Deion Sanders hit for his career. He said he wasn't a very good baseball player. And remember what he guessed?
Like 180-something, I thought.
180. The correct answer, 273. I'm sorry, 263. Beg your pardon, 263. He had 273 in his last full sort of kind of season. Anyway. Correction. That's still a partial season. 273 hit 1997, and then 173 when he came back in 2001 for his last run at it. But his career average is 263. We talked about stolen bases. He stole 186 bases, drove in 168 runs, ended up hitting 39 home runs in his nine partial years, and it was really amazing. So naturally, you know what I had to do, right? I had to look up Bo.
Oh, yeah?
What do you think Bo Jackson hit in his Major League Baseball career, Kush?
About 275 would be my guess. I know he was pretty good.
Actually, a little bit less. A little bit less than Dion. Dion was 263. Bo hit 250 in his eight partial years. He played a lot more games in his seasons than Dion did. And I think I was reading you Dion's, you know, games played. The highest was 97. He played in 95 another year. He played in 92 another year, 85, and then it drops off precipitously. Oh, no, correction. I beg your pardon. The highest was in 1997, in that year in which he hit 273. He played in 115 games. He had 500 plate appearances. That makes sense. You know, the more ABs he got, obviously, the better he got.
Mm-hmm.
But Bo played in 35 games, 124 games, 116 games, 111 games in the four biggest, periods of his career, 85, 75, 25, and 23. So parts, again, of 8 years. So he ended up with 2,600 plate appearances compared to Dion's 2,300 plate appearances. Dion played more seasons by one, but Bo played more games. And so he had a lower batting average career of 250, but in his 694 games, dude managed to bang 141 home runs and 415 runs driven in. He had home run totals of two his first year just playing in 25 games at age 23, then 22, 25, 32, 28. This was when he was an all-star in this period, of course, and finished 10th in the AL MVP voting in 1989. That's just crazy. That year, he hit 256 with 32 home runs and 105 driven in. Then 28, 76, and on, or 78, I beg your pardon, in 1990 and on down the line. So a lot more power, 141 home runs, 415 runs driven in. A lot more strikeouts, too, as big free-swinging home run hitters want to do. But, yeah, a very, very solid career. So my point to all of that is, obviously, I would love to see it happen again. You mentioned Kenny Lofton is another guy we could have looked at. I don't know that anybody today is going to do it. It's such an age of specialization.
It's a different era. But, I mean, it's simply a different era with because of that specialization. I don't think you're ever going to see that again. I mean, the fact that in baseball this year – we're all going to have the interesting storyline of Ohtani coming over from Japan, the one who can pitch
and pitches.
I mean, that's has all the makings of a spectacle, but it's still not the multi-sports type of spectacle that we've seen in the past. And I just because of the specialization that we're all talking about, I have been talking about for a while. Whenever the subject comes up,
If it was going to happen, you know, it probably would have happened with the likes of Tony Gonzalez, or it would have happened with Antonio Gates. He was Kent State, right?
Yep.
Football and basketball, and it's just not there. And like I said, I think part of it can trace back to the youth culture. The changing of youth sports, the culture in youth sports, and forcing kids to specialize early. I mean, it really limits the number of people who go to college and can play two sports. I mean, there are very few anyway, let alone have the goods to play at the professional level on two different sports. It's just it makes what's already a really difficult task that much harder when you tell kids at a very young age, don't even attempt to excel at two sports. Just pick one and focus on that, which I have a problem with. So anyway, that was just one of those interesting little things. Now, the other story, which is kind of a non-sports story, but it's a sports story. Did you see what they are bringing back this year out in Arizona? The Diamondbacks.
Yes, I did see this. I'm loving it.
The Diamondbacks. Thank you, baseball gods in Arizona. I didn't know the baseball gods. Well, maybe they're old, obviously, as gods tend to be, and they were tired to the warm, dry climate of Arizona. But the baseball gods working out there in Arizona have decided the time is right to bring back the bullpen car. That is right, the bullpen car. Yes, I can. I can, and I can dig it even longer than what you just gave it to me. I can dig that completely. I would love to.
Can you dig it?
And I would like that even longer. But that is so awesome. Now, I mean, you know, this was a thing in, I want to say, the
60s. Right? 60s and especially
started
the
60s, I think, Jim. Went all the way through the 70s and kind of got phased out in the very early 1980s. That is my guess.
That's why for anyone of the younger persuasion, it's probably always seemed weird to you if you've ever watched Major League and there's that part where he tells Jake to take the bullpen car.
That's right. That is right. Because that movie came out in 1989.
Yep.
So that is true. Younger people who don't, they probably, what the hell is that? Why is there a golf cart with an Indian's batting helmet on top
Take
of it?
Take the bullpen car.
It's the bullpen car. And what was so cool about it, as you recall, teams used to have so much fun.
Oh, yeah.
Marketing those by decorating them. You know, I'm totally making this up in my head, probably, because we're talking 40 years ago, you know, but. Didn't like in Philadelphia, didn't the bullpen car look like the Philly Fanatic? They did things that would like each team that had a bullpen car, which for those who don't know what the heck we're talking about are, of course, our golf carts that are just decked out to, decorated, I guess, in the team colors and in the team, you know, usually there'll be a batting helmet, a giant batting helmet. It's in the shape of a giant batting helmet.
Right. That's,
or something
that's the majority,
to do with the mascot.
Yeah.
Or it'll be driven by the mascot out to the mound.
I'm loving this random piece of trivia as I'm looking at the ESPN.com article. Yeah. The first to use a quote-unquote bullpen car was a little red wagon by the Indians in 1950.
How about that?
That's pretty funny. I did not know that.
So you mean meaning like a little red wagon like a kid gets pulled?
I mean,
or did it have a motor?
I think it had a motor because Little Red Wagon is in air quotes.
It would have been better if it was just a pulled, like, you know, a PF Flyer. He just had like an assistant strength coach. Well, they didn't even have strength coaches in 1950.
No.
Just a clubhouse attendant pulled the wagon.
And by the way,
with the really pitcher sitting in it with his little legs crisscrossed Indian style, crisscross applesauce. That would just make it even better.
And you know, I'm reading for next paragraph in that ESPN.com article is taking a quote from a Dick Stigman, a reliever for the Indians, Twins, and Red Sox in the 60s, saying, quote, "Nobody ran in from the bullpen. I don't think we could have made it. We all smoked."
There's a great picture. Speaking of that, there's a great picture. One of my favorite Twitter follows. And, Jim, I don't know how active you are on Twitter, but
here and there,
else.
I'm on.
One of my favorite Twitter follows is Super 70s Sports.
And I follow that, too. That's a good one.
It's hilarious. And he just tweeted yesterday, or maybe it was this morning, a picture of Hammer and Hank Aaron sitting by his locker laughing. And the caption was, "When you're trying to chase down the babe, you need a few trips to Flavor Country." And then you have to look around in the picture to see what the heck he's talking about. And then you finally realize it's the cigarette in Hammer and Hank's hand. Winston is Flavor Country, or whichever brand it was that said it's welcome to Flavor Country. But Hammer and Hank. So you're right. I mean, you know, they drank, smoked. You know, you remember, of course, Chuck Tanner was well known for smoking in the dugout, and, you know, the former Pirates manager. And anyway. The bullpen car was just a part of nostalgia. That is, it is so great to see that it's coming back. And there was a comment from the Diamondbacks. I'm trying to figure out who it was who said it. Who said it did outlive its usefulness, or it did, you know, run its course, or whatever you call it. It kind of became, you know.
Here it is. I have the quote from Diamondbacks CEO. Yeah, Derek Hall. He said, "Quote: I think it wore out its welcome. Yeah. There were these new stadiums, and the focus shifted to the guys running through the gates and onto the mound. We think the time is right to bring it back.
Right. And you know what? 40 years later, or 35 years later, it is time. I mean, I totally agree. What's really kind of amazing is. When, like, do you remember when John Rocker was lighting it up for the Braves before he did all of his stupid stuff?
Yes.
You know, that guy ended his career?
Yep.
Essentially. Sprinting from the bullpen to the mound kind of got everybody going, like, yeah! I mean, that guy wants to get after it.
Hey, he was trying to run a 40 at the combine every time he came out of the
pen.
Yeah,
exactly. And it was kind of cool, you know? And then there's the guys who just walk ever so slowly, just pacing themselves. I'll get there when I get there. I'm in control of this thing now. This is my game, you know, as they walk to the mound. And everybody kind of had their own way of doing that now. And now, hopefully, this catches on. And in every ballpark, from Comerica to Progressive to Dodger Stadium, you know, I want to see those things come back because two things. Number one, it's more fun than anything else they can do to make pitching changes, which are so, you know, they slow the game down so much to make them not, how do I want to say that? Whenever you see the manager motion to the pen, you know you're in for about another 5 or 6 minutes of waiting before the game resumes.
Right.
Because of warm-ups and commercials and so on and so forth.
Sadly,
we
yes.
Dread it. But now when we see the move, we're going to keep watching because here comes the car. And I want to see what they all look like, and I want to see how the guys react to it. And then the second thing, Jim, is one of the other comments that I read about this is, it will speed the game up because those slow, long, you know, walks to the mound from all the way from the outfield in most of the ballparks
yep.
Are going to be a thing of the past. They're gonna. I think Golic said it this morning. Take the governor off those things and get them cranking out at about 50 miles an hour. They're not going to do that, but it's going to move up there at top golf cart speed, just in the same way you would between holes after your drive on your local course. And it's going to get them out there to the mound and get them warming up quickly so we can get this game back on again. I just think it's a fantastic idea.
Yeah, I love it. I can't wait to see the back in action.
You know what else is a fantastic idea? Getting a new roof. And if you need one, $1 down. New siding, $1 down. If you need new windows, $1 down. Get a new look for your house. Your choice, roofing, siding, windows for $1 down. How? Well, that's the power of 7 years interest-free. That's right. Don't delay. Call WeatherSeal today. Get the roof, siding, windows you've always wanted for just $1 down because you don't pay any interest for 7 years. Call 1-877-WINDOWS. That's 877-WINDOWS. Call WeatherSeal today at 877-WINDOWS or get online and check them out at WeatherSealHomeServices.com. Gush, before we get ready to talk a little college basketball with Todd Walker, what do you say we give away another pair? In fact, I've got two more pair of tickets I want to give away right now to the Walleye game coming up this Friday against Quad City. I will give them to callers 4 and 5 right now to 866-240-1065, and we're right back after this.
And welcome back into the Extravaganza. Final segment here on this Wednesday edition, turning our attention to some college basketball. As we've been talking with as many from around the areas, we're in conference tournament week, but it did not go so well, did conference tournament week, which is already over for the Bowling Green Falcons. They fell back on Monday in the first round on the road at Central Michigan in overtime, 81-77, and as a 500 team now for the entire year. Season basically over. I know Coach Huger and the rest are already getting up on recruiting trips for the next season and everything. And to help us break down one final time Bowling Green basketball in 2017-2018, we welcome back to the program the voice of the Bowling Green Falcons, Todd Walker, on the show with us. Good afternoon, Todd. How you doing?
Hey, doing well. Good to be with you.
No, thanks so much for taking the time. It was a thud kind of an ending, let's put it that way, for the Falcons, not just in this game, but in the about five or so games to close out the regular season. The Falcons lost all of those and end up as a 500 team. In this game, in overtime on the road to Central Michigan, first of all, how much of a disappointment was it to have to go on the road? I mean, just a couple of weeks ago, I remember thinking, you know, they're still in a position to get a home game. Maybe if things go right, they could get a bye, you know, to the Cube, but instead have to go on the road once again for that first round game in the MAC back on Monday in the tournament, and it didn't go well, obviously, as this back and forth game went into overtime. What was really the key for the struggles, as you saw it, Todd, down the stretch for the Falcons?
Well, I think a big part of it was they just didn't shoot the ball very well. You know, going into the game on Monday in the five-game losing streak, the Falcons had shot 39% from the floor, 23% from three, and they didn't shoot it particularly well on Monday night, although they did shoot 39% from three-point range. Really, I think what you saw was a group of guys playing major minutes as starters for the first time kind of hit the wall. You know, it just seemed like they couldn't get their confidence back. They couldn't get things rolling again. I think the loss at Kent State really took a lot out of them. That was where the slide kind of started, even though they had lost at home to Akron before that. The Kent State game really, I think, symbolized all the problems of the losing streak to me, as they just were right there the whole game and just could not get the play at the end to win the game. You know, a questionable foul call certainly helped Kent State to get to the line and make their winning free throws, but you look at that game, Bowling Green shoots 4 of 20 from 3. They shoot 34% from the floor. So really, a lot of the other stats don't even matter. You know, when you shoot that poorly, it's hard to win games, and they didn't. And then, you know, they've had a tendency at times this year to to get blown out. I think that was what happened after that. They just kind of lost their way. They lost by 16 at Ohio, which shouldn't happen. Then they get blown out by Buffalo at home. So I think really it just hitting the wall, I think more mentally than physically. And they just couldn't find their way out of it down the stretch.
And so true on a couple of points there, Todd. You know, the getting blown out after hitting the wall, as you put it, down the stretch. I mean, I watched a good chunk of that game back on Friday to close out the regular season, the one at the Stroh against Buffalo where they give up 100 and lose by 30. And as I'm watching it, to be honest with you, I'm trying to think, well, okay, maybe I should be giving Buffalo their due as the best team in this league this year. But you're so right about, you know, the Kent State game and the shooting in general. I mean, in this game against Central Michigan on Monday, when, you know, everybody starts at 0-0 in theory again, only 40%, you know, from the field overall for this game. And you're right, you got to be able to shoot better than that.
Yeah, I think really the other thing is not only did Bowling Green struggle to shoot from three. I mean, you understand three-point shooting can go through ebbs and flows. You don't want to maybe ebb down to 23% for a long stretch, but really more troublesome was the shooting inside the arc. Bowling Green was last in the conference in two-point shooting percentage. In the regular season, they shot 46% on two-point baskets. That's dead last in the Mid-American Conference, and that's something they've just simply got to get better at. That is more finishing around the basket, whether it's the post players or the perimeter guys on the drive. And that's something that's got to get better. You figure three-point shooting can get better, but collectively they got to figure out a way to make those shots that you're supposed to make around the basket.
We're talking with Todd Walker, the voice of the Bowling Green Falcons, as their season, comes to an end with the MAC first-round loss back on Monday in overtime to Central Michigan on the road, 81-77. And some of these struggles, you know, for the team down the stretch, he had a couple double-doubles in the last couple of regular season games. But in this one, a back-and-forth game, and DiMaggio Wiggins goes 3 points, 1 of 9 from the field. He did have the 12 rebounds, but I look at numbers like that, think about the shooting that at times need to improve in, and that just jumps out at me. And when you look at a guy like Wiggins, he'll be a senior next year, as the rest of the guys will be getting, you know, a year older. But I kind of felt like I saw the wall that you were talking about, even with Wiggins in that final game. And in that final game, they obviously had their chances, you know, in overtime. What went wrong in that game specifically?
Well, I think the Central Michigan game, really what you pointed out, there were some shots around the basket that simply should have been made. Falcons were great on the boards. They had 18 offensive rebounds, but only turned it into 14 second chance points. Didn't convert enough of those. And really got some shots that needed to be made. You talked about DiMaggio. He obviously 1 for 9. That's not good enough in the position where he had the ball. And in a tight game on the road, and you're basically giving away those chances. I think that really was the main contributor. Other than that, I think they played pretty well. Defensively, I thought they played extremely well. Justin Turner did a great job limiting Sean Roundtree's ability to penetrate and start their offense. They like to drive and kick. They really were kind of shut down in that regard. So I think they played well against Central Michigan, but again, the chippies and the baskets around the paint that need to be points turned out a lot of times to not be points in that game. The Falcons on two-point baskets were 16 of 38 in that game. And again, that's keeping with the season-long number. It's just simply got to be better. You got to be better, stronger around the basket. And I think that'll be part of the off-season focus.
No doubt about it, Todd. We're talking with Todd Walker, the voice of the Bowling Green Falcons, here on the Extravaganza. And when I now start thinking back on this season, because at 16-16 to finish, even if the program would accept a CBI or CIT, I don't necessarily think that's coming for a 500 team when there are a couple other choices in the Mid-American Conference the way it's shaping up. So for all practical purposes, we know the season is basically done now. This was a team that lost those six in a row, counting the tournament game, to go from 16-10 with just by your record right there, maybe able to do something. Like I said, maybe get at least a home game, if not a bye, to the quarters that aren't even going to start at the queue for the MAC tournament until tomorrow. So just, but despite the struggles, you know, blatantly down the stretch and then losing in the first round of the MAC tournament, I do still think there were positives from this past season that can be taken forward in my conversations over the course of the season, not just with you, but with Coach Huger. The youth of this team has been a theme, and taking those steps to learn things this year and then to really apply them next year still feels like part of the game plan. And even though it's an unfortunate finish for the Falcons, I do think there were some positives that can definitely be taken away from this season to build on for next year. You saw much more of it than I did, Todd. What are some of those positive things the Falcons could at least take from this season?
I think that the six-game losing streak to end the season really has taken some of the shine off what I thought was a really transformative season to that point. Number one is the play of Justin Turner. I think this guy's a future MAC Player of the Year. I think he got jobbed on the Freshman of the Year voting that came out earlier today, but be that as it may, the other two guys in contention also had strong seasons. But Justin is tremendous. He's a program changer. I think he's going to lead this team to the promised land. Next, you saw the really development of DiMaggio Wiggins, averaging a double-double for the season. And, you know, you can nitpick about things with him, as we would tend to do at this time of year. But the fact of the matter is that he'll be the number one big man in this conference next year, and it won't even be close. Also, you look at Derek Koch, a freshman who came in and had a bit of an injury setback mid-season. I think that really slowed down his development, but he's a big, strong player that's going to be a force in this league. With an off-season to get better between his freshman and sophomore year will be huge. And then you look at some of the veterans that returned to this team. I think we saw real development from Antoine Lillard. He started the last 10 or 12 games and was very productive and, you know, minimized the things that had kind of dogged him before, which was maybe turning the ball over too much and bad shot selection. He cleaned that up. I think really the question marks for me are with Rod Caldwell and Dylan Fry, formerly the starting point guard and starting two guard. That changed to Dylan was the starting one and Rod was coming off the bench late in the year. I'm not sure that that's really the arrangement that you want. Dylan seemed to really struggle in that particular capacity. He only scored about 9.5 points a game in conference play as compared to 15 in the non-conference. I think a point guard coming in will probably be a big focus for this team. I think they'd like to get a point guard that can run the team and be a little more dynamic. And I think that's the number one thing they'll have to work on, or they probably are working on in recruiting. But Erie Wright, a lot of positives. I think you see the young guys that are, quote-unquote, maybe more projects, but a lot of possibility with Daquan Plowden and even 6'10", Janiah Gadsden. He is a big, strong body, and once they can refine his basketball skill a little bit, he could be a force down the stretch or down the road in his career, too. So a lot of great things for this team this year. You know, they were in position with 2.5 weeks to go to earn a bye, and I think they hopefully found out there's a small margin between a 9 seed and a 4 seed in this league.
Yeah, well said on that last part. It doesn't matter who I talk to, coach, broadcaster, writer, doesn't matter. That right there, not much of a difference between 4 and 9 in the MAC. That's kind of what we all view this conference as, one that is usually deep. Anybody could beat anybody on a given night, that kind of thing. And you're so right about that. So I agree. Also, it'll be nice to see some of these other pieces like Turner and Wiggins and Koch and a couple others that you mentioned take next step. And there's no question there's still needs to be things to be brought in slash recruiting and to show that the season never ends. Coach Huger, is my understanding, he's out recruiting basically as we speak already. So hopefully they can get some of those guys in here. And I agree. I think this team absolutely can take that next type of step. The Buffaloes will still be there. I think it benefits that at least right now it seems like the East Division, which comes into play, of course, as we know in scheduling of conference games, that they're a little down this year. I mean, Akron, Ohio, Kent State, all of them usually near the top with Buffalo. They were all down at the bottom this year. Not to say that that's going to continue, of course, for next year, but there is room for improvement in the Falcons, and I think there is a spot for them to take that next kind of step as we go into next year. We're talking with Todd Walker, the voice of the Bowling Green Falcons, as we're kind of wrapping up the Falcons season. It came to an end on Monday with the 81-77 overtime loss to Central Michigan in the first round of the MAC tournament. So with basketball more or less behind us, and I know the hockey side of things are doing well right now. They'll be in the WCHA semis on the road, and I want to say Northern Michigan. Yeah, Northern Michigan this coming weekend, looking to advance past that. But next up on after that would be coming up in a couple months, the spring game, of course. And obviously we had the recruiting day, Todd, just basically a little over a month ago, or right about a month ago at this time in early February. Give us a couple of highlights, even though we're maybe, you know, month and a half or whatnot away from the spring game type of time. What kind of things can we look forward to or to keep an eye on the football side of thing? And we know there's lots of improvement that can happen there.
Yeah, I think, you know, the spring game itself sometimes is a monumental waste of time as far as watching it and trying to learn something about the team. Not that you don't go to it anyway, but I think that what this spring is about, number one, is installing whatever defensive changes are going to be made by Carl Pelini and basically a totally revamped and a new defensive coaching staff. I think that's going to be a big focus of the spring on offense. I think they just want to get more reps for Daigie and get him out there at quarterback and let him take as many snaps and reps as he can in the spring. You know, last year they had James Morgan as the starter, but they kind of spread the reps out. And when he got demoted and then Daigie got hurt, and really I don't think any quarterback got a nice full season of work. So I think offensively that's what I'm concerned about, getting him a nice spring full of reps. And then, you know, working in the replacements on the offensive line, lost a couple of real good veteran starters there, and Tim McAuliffe and Ryan Hunter, got to replace those guys. But I think 1 and 1A are the new defense and the attitude and the scheme there, and getting reps with the quarterback, throwing the ball to those receivers and getting that part of the game shored up.
Todd Walker, he is the voice of the Bowling Green Falcons all season long on basketball and, of course, football as well. Todd, we always appreciate the time. I enjoyed talking with you at points this season, and when we get into more football, not the spring, but more towards August and getting ready for the next regular season. Hope to have you on again in those types of times. Thanks so much for the time this season, though.
No problem. Always appreciate talking about the Falcons.
Absolutely. Todd Walker, voice of the Bowling Green Falcons, taking some time wrapping up the basketball season for the Falcons. And, you know, even though it was a thud, you lost six in a row, did the Falcons first round of the MAC tournament. And this was a team that was 16-10. And I love the one line that was brought up in there, how in some ways this had the makings of a transformative type of year for the Falcons. I mean, yes, you know, it'll stick with us because it's the last thing we saw, the six-game losing streak, five in the regular season, first game in the MAC tournament. But before that, this team was 16-10. And you're thinking, hey, you know, ball bounces, right? Maybe they even split with Buffalo, because at that point they had two with Buffalo left. You might have a 20-win team on your hands. That's a team that's, you know, maybe not NIT or NCAA unless they take the automatic bid. You got a team that could play in some postseason basketball, and, you know, a couple weeks ago when they were still in that mode, I had asked Coach, you know, given the state of your program, et cetera, and so on, would you accept the CBI-CIT invitation, you know, if it came in? And Coach Huger's answer, paraphrasing here, was basically good. We know where we're at, what we're trying to get to. Yeah, we would accept that kind of invitation. Of course, a random FYI showing how those below the NIT vary from program to program. We had Todd Kowalczyk on the program last week, and he said, no, the Rockets for Toledo would not necessarily take that, but that would have been a great step. You know, get at least to the quarterfinals, if not the semifinals of the MAC, win around almost 20 games, which was very possible. And then parlay that, even though it's a third level that no one really knows, parlay that into, you know, a small postseason tournament in the CBI or the CIT or something. And that's the kind of thing that can help step up a program. Now, it's going to leave a lot of bad taste in some of those guys' mouths, obviously. losing the six in a row the way they did to finish 500 overall for the season. But you still saw some of the positives, and I love what is going to be coming back to this team. I mean, DiMaggio Wiggins came into his own in a way this year. As Todd mentioned, averaged a double-double as a junior, so he'll be the senior. And given all those types of things, I agree with Todd. He is almost going to be without question, unless there's a stud freshman we all really aren't aware of somewhere else, Wiggins will be the best big man in this conference, you know, next year. Turner, yeah, he could. I mean, young guy, but could have MAC Player of the Year as we go down the stretch. There's a lot of positives next season, and I still expect, given what's there, and, you know, as I mentioned, Coach Huger, I was told by the BG guys, we were trying to get him for this week to wrap up, but given the early exit, he is literally already on the recruit road as we speak recruiting, which, of course, just shows you how that aspect of the college sports game, whether it's basketball or football, never ends. There's always a recruiting trip to be had. You can bring in hopefully a couple of those players to fill in some of the other holes to go with Wiggins and Turner and Koch and some of the others. And you have a makings of a team that can take a next step and be a threat, you know, in this conference, which, of course, as we know, is something that we have not been able to say about Bowling Green basketball, you know, in a long, long time. This team made an NIT about 10 years ago now. That was the last postseason berth. And we, of course, know it's been decades since an NCAA berth. Let's put it this way. We were nowhere close to 64 teams, and nobody was even seeded the last time Bowling Green was in a tournament. It is still very possible that those things could come to an end in the next couple of years if this thing keeps developing. And we definitely saw the flashes of that development this year. But being a young team, faltering down the stretch, shows that this team wasn't ready yet. But can they make that next step next year? They'll certainly have a couple of the lead horses to do that. It's a matter of playing well, executing, and getting some young guys in. And then, quite frankly, starting to beat some of the good teams. You know, not losing by 30 at home to Buffalo. Not giving up 100 points in the rivalry game against the Rockets. And I do think Akron, Ohio, and Kent State in that Eastern Division being down for this year, if they were to stay down next year, is something that will really help speed up the development of the Falcons, because that means there's less quote-unquote traditional powers from this conference to have to go over. It's still lined up in the future. It was a disappointing end, of course, for the Falcons this year, but there's still lots and lots of good things that are still yet to come. And that's going to do it for this edition of the Extravaganza. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. Stick around, though. Mike Miller with the doubleheader. First Drive Time, then Face Off, the hockey show coming at you next. And then just after 7 o'clock, another automatic bid will be handed out. Speaking of NCAA basketball, the Patriot League championship as another automatic bid to the tournament. Courtesy of our friends at Westwood One, about 7:15, the coverage time here on 106.5 The Ticket. You got district semifinal action over on Talk Radio 100.7 in Division One from teams here in the area with Bill Clark and the crew. So a fun night of basketball. But before we get there, it's Mike Miller, Drive Time, then Face Off, the hockey show coming at you next. And we'll reconvene for a fun episode tomorrow on a Thursday. See ya.